One day, as a child, Krishna, one of the main Hindu gods, was outside playing. He decided, as many children do, for whatever reason, to eat mud. His foster mother, Yashoda, frustrated to hear from other children that her child had eaten mud, beckoned him towards her and told him to open his mouth. Krishna, I would imagine, just like most other children, did so begrudgingly. Unlike other children, however, what Yashoda saw was not chewed up mud and tiny baby Krishna teeth. What Yashoda saw was the entirety of the cosmos. Yashoda looked into Krishna's mouth and saw swirls of stars, roots of great trees winding through mud, breaking through into their round trunks and spiral of branches. She saw the slow bloom of lotus, the small fires of homes, and the large fires of forest. She saw the rapid movements of fish and their wave flirtations. She saw the fields near their home and fields she had never seen. She saw the past, the future, and all the intricately placed webs and galactic strings that keep it all together. As any mother would do, after seeing the cosmos contained in a small mouth of their child, Yashoda passed out. Interwoven with the stories of Krishna and Yashoda is a message of love, the type of love that mothers and parents share with their children, a love completely free of prejudice, an automatic, almost blind love, a sustaining love, a love that when received feels almost epic, almost as epic as being able to see all the cosmos in the mouth of someone you love. In the stories of Krishna, when Yashoda sees the greatness of the world and universe in Krishna's mouth, it is this point where she realizes Krishna is Lord, that Krishna not only carries a piece of the divine, but is in fact divine. Many scholars will discuss how Krishna is humanized through the stories of his naughty childhood and his interactions with Yashoda for the purpose of engaging with this kind of love. The tales of Krishna show us Krishna as a human child who steals butter and eats mud, compelling us to love Krishna and us opening us up to the love he and Yashoda share, that not only is shown as a great love, but a divine way of loving, a loving that opens our eyes to the cosmos. I, as I'm sure many of us do or have, long for a love that is as wholesome and filling as a mother or a father gives their child, and as epic and transcendent as a view of the cosmos. I, of course, also long for this love to be found in one person. I long for the epic, I long for the transcendent to occur in one person, perhaps even in one moment, where I can end the search for meaning, purpose, for love, place, home, and settle into my place in the cosmos, into my cosmic peace of transcendence. A peace, a place where I love what's around me and never have to leave to love. However, this search, this quest for the epic and the delightfully simple love in a romantic setting usually dedicated to one is a draining, perhaps not always worthwhile search to give it all to. If one person contained all the cosmos, if looking into their mouth one could see it all, what would be the point of interacting with others? What would the purpose of spreading love we know is best when spread? And how could the world really exist if one person contained it all? Instead of looking for an unveiling of the cosmos in one, perhaps the more worthwhile search is a quest for an uncovering of cosmic pieces, the little bits of universe that are in everyone. This search is one of more difficulty, one of more patience, but also one that requires more creativity, one that requires, well, the utmost full and ever-expanding kind of love. It takes some muscle to fall in love, says a lyric from an MIA song, a popular rock and rap artist. Of course it takes some muscle to fall in love, but it also takes muscle just to love. Because though love proves itself to be an emotion and action of wonder, it is truly one of complications and difficulties as well. In the widely known Corinthian verse, love is described as patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. I, of course, find meaning in this verse. Love, no matter what, is patient and kind. It always protects. It always hopes. It is also, however, complicated, difficult, trying, frustrating, and sometimes just weird. And though love may always protect, always trust, always hope, always persevere, what happens when people don't? What happens when love may not be boastful or loud, but people are? And what happens when we give love that is patient, that is kind, but others don't give us that love back? I would say in these moments of questions, these moments when the swirling pieces of cosmos are extra hidden, moments of no one loving is when we must love, when we have to love. And from loving, when there seems to be no one that loves us back, we will somehow get the love we need and even some of the love we want. When I returned from the Peace Corps, I had my heart broken. And when I say broken, what I really want to say, what I feel called to say, is that I had my heart obliterated. I felt as if I discovered new parts of my heart, new ways of loving, new ways of love, and all of a sudden those were ripped from me, tossed on the floor and burned in a huge fire that I couldn't put out, that I couldn't stop. Recognizing that this may sound a bit dramatic, it felt dramatic. It felt dramatic because I fell in love for the first time and he didn't love me back. He seemed to seamlessly slip back in his day-to-day existence of work, friends, and family. Well, I couldn't even eat. I couldn't even really speak to anyone, including those I ordered my coffee from, without dissolving into small sobs of frustration. I am not going to claim that I'm fully healed now, even after a year and 7 months. But all the healing that has gone on has come from me searching out love, sometimes consciously, sometimes not, when I'm not sure it is there. This search was healing because love was there, and it was in people who in different capacities and in different ways loved me back when I was not sure if there was something or someone worth loving, when I was not sure if love could come back. Doing this, loving when you are uncertain about what love will come back, I think is one of the best ways of building love. And not only building love, but also building faith. An unshakable faith that at its core has an unshakable grace. Sometimes, when chatting about Unitarian Universalism and what it means to follow the seven principles or to even have them, I get frustrated. Frustrated with the fact that one doesn't even have to really follow the principles to be UU. Frustrated that sometimes seven seems like a lot. Frustrated when seven seems like too little. I often will just end up saying, why don't people just love? Love each other and act on it. Dedicate all our time to that. It seems as if people did this pure act of consistently loving and defending this love, a greater world would start to form. But I don't do this. I don't love all the time, and I don't love all people, and most people don't either, because it's hard. Loving takes all we have, and we have a lot to lose when we put our love on the line, a love that we aren't guaranteed back. This time of uncertainty, times of when you're not all sure you'll get the love you give back, may be the most important time to love. To love because you believe in love. Loving when there's perhaps nothing to love, because a piece of you knows that love is worth it, even worth it when there's nothing that is taking it in, nothing that is taking it in and giving it back. Loving because a tiny part of you knows that love is what fuels the best parts of you, and even when you aren't getting anything back, the world needs those parts of you to keep existing, to keep being fueled and taken care of with love. My friend was writing a paper recently in which he was talking about dancing, about how the dancer looks at her stage, her piece of floor, her walls, and knows or sees what has been there, what is there, and sees what she can put there, what she can create with her trained limbs and her practiced movement. She enters onto the stage and creates. Becoming the creation, she becomes the dance. Not all of us create dance or art, but we all create love. And in this creation, we have the privilege, we have the honor of becoming our love, becoming our creation. In the last section of the poem, Fault Lines, there is a description of the slipping and earth shivers that occur, that are maybe always occurring. And because they are always occurring, the shifting, the shivering, it is from here that we must act, from here that we must love, and know that, as the poem articulates, that this is our strength. There's your strength, the shifting plates, the restive earth, your room, your precious life, they all proceed from love, the ground on which we walk together. I have many friends currently who are struggling with love, struggling to love from a particularly rocky shift and shiver of life. One of them recently texted me with the question of, why do we put so much stock in love? I didn't answer her right away, mostly because it was 2 a.m. and I had already passed out drooling on top of my Hindu goddess book, but also because I didn't have an answer. Well, here's the answer I have now. We put stock in love because there's a mystical beauty in this world and we feel it through love. We put stock into love because there's music, art, dance, creation, people, and we feel and know all of these through love. Because along with recognizing the inherent worth and dignity in every person, we also recognize the cosmic pieces, the past, present, and future chunks of universe that exist in us all, and we can find these pieces through love. We put stock in love because even when there is no hope, love has a way of not caring and producing hope slivers. We put stock in a love that is patient, a love that is kind, a love that is revolutionary, a love that is weird, awkward, difficult, complicated, ever-changing, and in its finest moments, completely breathtaking.